From kids to youth to adults, we all spend so much time in front of screens these days. On this episode of the podcast, we're going to talk about sort of a state of the screen and how camp is one of the last places on earth that can offer a unique, much-needed respite from these screens that backlight our lives. Welcome to the Sacred Playgrounds Podcast, where we dive deep into theology, research, and practical wisdom for camps, retreat centers, and other key ministry spaces. I'm your host, Jared Rendell, camp enthusiast and part of the Sacred Playgrounds team. This podcast features Dr. Jake Sorensen, a scholar and practitioner who's helping leaders think more deeply about outdoor ministry and the impact it's making. Wonder with us what God might have in store at your Sacred Playground. Hey everyone, welcome to the playground. It's another episode of the Sacred Playgrounds Podcast. And Jake, it is good to see you. Welcome to the podcast, man.
Always good to see you, my friend. Thank you for welcoming me so graciously.
You and everyone else. Sometimes I like to picture a little as we start these, like meeting at kind of a playground. Like we had that growing up. I lived in a small town outside of a medium-sized town, and there was one playground, and this would happen. Like we would just, from all these little points of the city, we would just trickle to the playground, and you know, and somebody came on rollerblades, and somebody came on a bike, and a group came walking from here. So sometimes I picture that with us as we go, and whoever else is listening.
Oh man, those playgrounds, you know, it's amazing when you mention something like that, I get nostalgic about, you know, meeting up at the playground, right? Who's going to be there, and you just never knew. And you know, driving past them now, so many of them are sitting empty. It's just like, oh man, but they are still meeting places. You know, it's not like kids are not going out to the playgrounds at all, but you know, I had to kick my kids out the door sometimes, go to the playground and play. They'd have a good time. So
yeah, every time.
You know, that feeds into some of what we'll be talking about today too.
It does. I was making that transition in my head because I remember at the beginning of this pandemic, at the point when we thought, okay, this is going to be like a month, 2 months, right? Like, you know, March 2020 came, and we were like, we had some friends who were about to have a baby, and we were like, oh, they're going to have to be at the hospital during all this and figure all this out, but we won't have to deal with that in September of 2020 when our youngest was born. Little did we know. But I remember, it's one of these poignant things, these poignant pandemic memories for me, is it's like 2 weeks in, and the news is on, and it was schools had shut down, and they were interviewing some parents. Like, what's this been like? How's it, you know, how have you been at home? And I remember this dad on the news screen saying, we've just been playing video games nonstop. I don't know what else you're supposed to do during this. And that was 2 weeks in of, you know, 2.5 years later.
Right. And then, I mean, immediately pivoting to online school. And so, you know, there was all this pressure to stay off screens, keep your kids off screens, and now put your kids on screens so that they can try to go to school. And yeah. I mean, you know, those of you who had elementary school kids during that time, wow, my heart is really with you. That has just been so hard for those folks. Because our kids were adolescents. So they were at least able to engage. But these challenges of screens have been, it's been really hard. Yeah. And you know, how do you pivot back? You know? Mm-hmm. How do you go back to in-person things? It's been so challenging.
Even as a person who loves technology, thinks that technology can get used so well, built a lot of my, you know, vocation and career around using technology well, as a, you know, as a parent, and even in that professionally, like you can see the fallout and the impact for all ages, kids especially.
Yeah, I really don't want this to be an attack Jared episode, you know. I hope you don't feel personally attacked as we talk about technology and screens and you know, screen time with kids, you know. as you said, I mean, so many of us in ministry have spent the last couple of decades trying to get proficient in, you know, website design and the online platforms and social media sharing and all these things. We have to be in these spaces, and you have helped so many of us do that effectively. And there's so many challenges that come with these online spaces for adults and especially for the kids.
Yeah.
And so I really think it's worth talking about.
So we're going to talk about some of that today. Let's start, if we can, with kind of a state of the screen right now. Right now we are, you know, lots of school is back in person, but even a lot of those that still have some amount of hybrid. Some of these things that weren't online before, I mean, we were building hybrid spaces in our churches and hybrid ways of being. And a lot of that is beautiful. It's literally part of my day job. It's beautiful to have that connectivity. The fact that that's providing some of that for us is so good. And like we've mentioned in a few other episodes, in person is in our bones, in our blood, in our creational DNA.
We're made for each other.
Absolutely. So let's figure out a little bit of where we are now, right? We know, you know, we're both parents. We see articles and we see all of these things, and we're, you know, figuring out with our own kids the time that they're spending on screens, whatever it might be doing, right? It's not about, at the risk of having some back in the day, like back in the day, the screens were basically a TV show or movie. And we had gotten to probably video games by our growing up. That was kind of the only couple of interactions. Now, all of these different ways of being, it's not just entertainment for one, all these different ways of being, it's facilitating. It's a mode. So give us a bit of the state of the screen. Where are we now in 2022?
Yeah, I mean, and bringing up like our childhood, I think is an interesting way to start, because, you know, when we were kids, it was about, you know, don't spend too much time on the TV screen or playing Nintendo, because it'll rot your brain, right? That was the thing.
It'll rot your brain.
And I'm not sure it has, you know, I'm not sure it hasn't, you know, I don't know what my brain would be like if I hadn't spent so much time on playing video games and so forth. But it really has changed. And so that's an important thing to remember. It has changed in intensity. And it has changed qualitatively in terms of what we are interacting with and how we're interacting with screens. And so one of the main things to remember is that the smartphone has only been on the market for 15 years. That is a very new technology, where we have the screen in our hands with us all the time, and we can constantly check it. And so, I mean, you're standing in line at the grocery store and you're in line for 3 minutes. Most people are pulling out their smartphone and interacting with something, you know, some sort of an app. Maybe they're texting somebody, but it might be an app. It might be a mobile game, something like that. And so it has become constant. It has become always with us, almost an extension of us. And, you know, so much so that, you know, some of the memorization work, people are saying, why do I need to memorize these things? You know, why do I need to memorize my multiplication table? I have a calculator in my pocket. Why do I need one in my head? I have the store of human knowledge at my fingertips. If I need to answer a question, I just, you know, say, hey, Alexa, I need this, you know, give me this information. And you can get it just like that. And so that changes the way that we take in information. So it has changed qualitatively. That's an important thing to remember. The other thing that has happened is the interaction has gotten to a point where it has become almost addictive. And I say almost because technically it's not yet in the psychiatric manual as an addictive disorder. Screen technology. But there are a lot of folks, a lot of psychology folks who say that it should be. And so there's some very strong arguments that addiction to technology is something that should be diagnosable. And so the way those things happen are through things like dopamine rushes, you know, how many likes do I have? How many views do I have? you know, all of those things are, you know, what are the comments like of this post that I spent so much time doing? It really does get addictive. And it's so much so that there's actually lawsuits going on right now. And this was one of the things that I saw this morning, that there's a lawsuit against TikTok for their use of data. And so they're actually using metadata from the kids that are engaging in TikTok, looking at their viewing habits, and you know, how many times they rewatch videos, things like that, the types of videos they watch, and they use these algorithms to give them more of what they want. And it makes them interact more with the app. It's they're using the same mechanism as a drug would use,
yeah,
to get people more involved and more connected to the specific app. You know, Facebook and Instagram have been accused of doing the same thing. And these things are being litigated right now. And so when we think of the state of the screen, that's part of it, you know, that we're questioning right now what constitutes an addiction, and what is going too far ethically for these companies as they try to mm-hmm. get more market share. And so, you know, where are we in terms of usage? Well, if we're talking about teenagers, we're talking about well over 90% have access to a smartphone. In 2018, that was the most recent Pew Research study on adolescent usage of smartphones, 95% had access to a smartphone on a daily basis. And 45% in 2018 now, because this has gone up every year, so it's well over half now in 2022, they said they were online almost constantly. That is something that is just, you know, these ballooning statistics of how many people are not only have access, but have that, you know, I'm waiting in line, I have to check it. I have to sign in. When we think about access at even younger ages than adolescence, 40% of children have cell phones before the age of 10. And over 2/3 by age 12 have a cell phone. And so it is becoming ubiquitous. For adolescents, it is ubiquitous. But even for young children, a lot of them have a personal cell phone. And then the pandemic happened, and that sped everything up. It sped up adoption of technology, and it increased usage. In fact, it almost doubled screen usage among children and adolescents. And so it's broken down by age group, and the number that are using their devices for 4 or more hours per day, it doubled in every single age group.
Hmm.
And so it's an increasing usage, and I would say it's a problem. Because there is so much usage, and because of this addiction problem. And it's also been linked, cell phone usage and screen time has been linked to so many different challenges among children and adolescents.
Yeah. So you're putting on your look into the future hat. Now when you talk like a little bit about this addiction, so you see, I'm hearing at least one thing out there, you see this will probably become something diagnosable in terms of, you know, in terms of the addiction pieces. Because like you said, it follows literally the same pathway, both kind of chemically and experientially, as any other addiction we might talk about, right?
Correct. And it has adverse effects.
Yeah,
and so
which
those,
is part of it. Yep.
Yep. And so what we're talking about here is, remember, it's only been since 2007. That's when the iPhone came out, and adoption was pretty rapid, but it's only been ubiquitous for the last, say, 10 years. And so we're building data sets about this and what these companies are doing. And so to try to quantify this, we need data over time. We've already got some of it. Mm-hmm. And there's a great book that I would recommend for people, for parents, for professionals. It's by Jean Twenge. And it's called iGen. And she labels this younger generation iGen, because of the usage of the internet and social media and cell phones and so forth. And she really does a great job of researching the connection between screen time and adverse effects.
Mm.
And so she is able to directly link increased screen time to increased feelings of loneliness and increased depression and anxiety. We know that depression and anxiety have been on the rise. And this was pre-pandemic that depression and anxiety were on the rise, not just because of the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And so these were becoming more and more problematic for adolescents and for young adults entering college. Some of these things can be directly related to screen time. And so there are adverse effects. There's also a corresponding decrease in reported happiness the more young people spend on screens. And she's able to connect it to all sorts of other things, including in-person gatherings. And so that's one of the things that really is a challenge, because we're talking about capitalism here, right? And so if people are spending more and more time online and not in other spaces like the mall, right? I mean, think of the 80s and the 90s. Where were we going to hang out? You know, let's go to the mall. See who's there. Right?
They're just ghost towns now.
They're just ghost towns.
These
right?
huge, like we're in the cities, and there are massive malls that are complete ghost towns. Yep. And they're people talk about them like they're the back alley in a rough neighborhood. Like you don't go there after 8 p.m.
It's crazy, right? And they were vibrant. They were places of life. You know, so bad that you had mall cops there just to keep the adolescents under control because they were causing trouble. You know, there were so many kids hanging out at the mall, right? Or the arcade, yep. or these other public spaces. And so when we think of these network publics, these social spaces, a lot of those have moved online, and that has forced some places like malls to close, you know, and become ghost towns, as you say. So where are they spending time? They're spending time where their friends are. And a lot of their friends are in online spaces. Yep. And so that's something to remember. Like in so many ways, kids haven't changed, you know, it's not. And I think this was an interesting point that an author named Dana Boyd made in a book called It's Complicated, The Social Lives of Network Teens. Really interesting book where she makes the argument that the young people aren't addicted to technology per se. They're addicted to each other. So young people have that same sort of need to interact with friends as every previous generation has. However, now the primary space where they're interacting is not in person, it's online. And there are consequences to that. And some of the consequences are in social skills and interaction with others, self-confidence, the way you present yourself. That leads to some of these things that Twenge found in her book, iGen, in terms of decreases in happiness, increased reports of loneliness, and depression and anxiety. And so you think of these online spaces where people can make anonymous comments, and where meanness really prevails. Yeah. You know, if we were at the mall or the arcade or the park or something like that, and somebody was being a jerk, there'd be somebody else to stand by the side of somebody who's getting bullied. Online, it's a totally different dynamic, and things can be taken totally out of context too. And so there's not that room for reconciliation or even confrontation. You know, you don't even have that. You know, you can't even go fisticuffs. Not that that's a healthy way to solve your problem, but, you know, I mean, think of the playgrounds, right?
We're not throwing enough punches these days.
But
to your point, like there were different ways to work this out. And a lot of those online spaces, when you come up with something like a conflict, avoidance is by far the easiest. Shut the screen, close the app. But avoidance is by far the easiest way to deal with conflict in those spaces.
And it's a very difficult thing to do, you know? So people seek connection elsewhere. And, you know, I want to acknowledge that there are a lot of positives to this too, right? I mean, people are finding community where they wouldn't normally find it. I mean, they're finding these these niche social groups of people that they feel connected to, even though they've never met them in person. But they can talk with and chat with, and, you know, somebody who's going through exactly the same things that they're going through, mm-hmm. or has exactly the same interests. And so there are a lot of positives that come with this. But there are so many negatives as well. And so I don't want to say, like, we need to go back to the, you know, the dark ages and get rid of all technology and screens. We can't. But I don't want to say all these things are bad. There are some good things, but there's so much bad that goes along with it that we really need to monitor and regulate these things. I mean, again, think of the mall. There were mall cops. You know, there were people, there were adults there supervising, making sure things didn't get out of hand. There were business owners that cared about their business, but also cared about the kids that were there. And when we've got something like these online spaces, you know, they thrive on controversy and the sort of arguments that would have gotten us kicked out of the mall years ago.
Mm-hmm. It feels like there are two things, right? Lots in lots of these spaces, they're positive and negative. There's impact, and that impact can go both directions and a whole bunch of you know, spaces in between. So one, we got to do things on purpose. It feels like intentionality really matters here from a parenting standpoint, from how we teach and train our kids to teachers, to all of this. We have to do this on purpose. We have to know these positive and negative. So right, to be informed and be intentional feel like the things that make the biggest difference here. Two, and what I think we'll do, Jake, is take a break here and we'll come back and talk about this other thing that we need, which is a break sometimes. Right? Yeah. We need to unplug sometimes. And this is where, to the Sacred Playgrounds podcast, camp offers something that few other places can offer in the same way right now. Let's take that break. We'll come back and talk about how camp is a unique place where it's actually the kids who are the ones who are saying, oh, thank goodness I don't have a screen right now. We'll be right back.
The Effective Camp Project has helped Christian camps across the country tell their story in a new way to parents and donors. You know that camp makes a difference because you see it with your own eyes. But we need reliable data to convince those who are skeptical and to help us identify areas for improvement. Now is your chance to gather data from your own camp. Our team of experienced researchers works with you to create custom surveys for your campers and parents. We compare your results to data from dozens of other Christian camps to show where your camp really shines and to target areas for program development. In addition to data reports and in-depth consultations, you will receive a communications toolkit to share your unique results with your audiences. Visit effectivecamp.com to learn more.
All right, everyone, welcome back. So, Jake, I'm a parent. You're a parent. You know, a lot of our friends in our circles have got a kid or six, and this is part of where this conversation gets gritty, because when I go home in a little while, I got to have a conversation about homework and if that has to be done on your school issued iPad or not, or oh, if you got it done. What is, and I've got one right in the midst of this that is like, it's the default. The first thing, the first desire is, oh, maybe I can do something on the screen. I worked, and often it'll come, here's how it comes. I worked during my free time. I got my homework done. So now I can ..
Yep.
And now I can jump on this. And that we have that conversation all too regularly.
I hear you, man. This is so hard. Like, and I think every parent can relate to this.
Yeah.
This is really hard to navigate. There's not an easy answer to what then should I do? You know, because you know, we threw a bunch of statistics at people, and I mean, hopefully during the break, people didn't go throw their cell phone in the lake or something like
there's
that.
There's so many iPads smashed right now. Oh, just dude, gone.
Just remember, you still have to pay it off. Oh man. But you know, like so it's a perennial problem of parenting, right? You know, times change. We're trying to do the best we can. We know we only have one shot at this. you know, in terms of our kids growing up. How do we do this? Parents are doing their best. We're all trying to do our best. And so we can be wiser when we have some data points, and, you know, trying to put some limits on this is really, really important. But also recognizing that parents do recognize the problem here. You know, again, it was on the national news this morning where I saw this TikTok, you know, concern.
Yeah.
It's all over. Parents really understand that this is a problem, but they don't always know how to handle it, what to do about it. And so one of the places they turn is camp, and they expect camp to be a technology-free zone. You know, we do these parent surveys every year. It's 99% of parents agree that camp is a place to unplug from technology. That is one of the primary reasons that they're sending their children to camp. They see this as one of the big benefits. It's a respite from technology. They're finally going to be away from it. And it's a positive place for them to be away from it. And that is something that we really have to remember as camp directors, camp supporters, church folks who are taking kids on a retreat, on a camp experience, on a wilderness excursion, that parents recognize that this is important to be away from technology.
That number is helpful, right? Because we all wonder, should we just allow it? Or should we allow some time on it as part of the program during the week? Or do we need to create a tech camp or whatever it might be? That's a pretty overwhelming number to say, maybe, but probably not. And here's why. Because every parent is seeing this as a gift.
I'm actually quite opinionated on this. And, you know,
what?
People, who, me? People might find that off-putting, but I mean, don't do it. Don't have screens at camp. As much as possible, eliminate them, you know, and find the places where you are relying on technology and see what you can do to unplug. This is one of the fundamental characteristics of the camp experience, unplugged from home. It means that we're unplugged from the home environment, we're away from home, things like that. But it also means that we are literally unplugged from our devices. And so the more unplugged we can be, the more different from home it is, but also the more opportunity there is to reset, to focus on the relationships around us, to focus on creation around us. Because even something like light pollution from our technology affects our interaction with nature, because you can't see the stars, you know?
Right.
You can't go for, I mean, a night hike when we've got lights everywhere. So something like that. Can be a technology piece that we might want to consider. Are there spaces that are free of these things? You know, wilderness excursions, obviously. But then when we talk about cell phones, if directors are having discussions with their program directors or parents or whatever about cell phone usage at camp, I say absolutely not. It is not a place for cell phones. And there are so many reasons why. But one of them, as you pointed out, 99% of parents don't want them. Think it's a place to unplug from technology. And so, you know, I hear stories, and every camp director has a story about a parent or multiple parents hiding cell phones in their luggage.
They put the cell phone. Yeah.
Yep. And there is even some that'll have two, you know, one to turn in and then one to hide. You know, it's devious.
You work that hard.
Oh yeah.
They do, don't they?
They do. But it's not because they want their kid to have a cell phone. It's not because they want them to, you know, keep their Snapchat streak going or to play their mobile game or to text them every night. They don't want that. What they want is they want their kid to be safe, and they want them to they want to be able to have access to them.
Mm-hmm.
They want to know where they are at all times. Because here's the thing, like we've got iPhones in our family, and there's an app on here called Find My iPhone. And I can tell you right now where my children are because they have their cell phones on them. And I'm used to that. So it's very challenging for a parent to send a child to camp, even as I understand it's important for them to be unplugged from technology. It's also difficult for me to think of them without a lifeline like that. The cell phone sort of becomes that lifeline. There are other ways, though, for camp directors to offer that lifeline and, you know, use technology to do it. Take pictures and post them in a secure location so that parents can see what their kids are up to. post updates on a secure location about what the camper groups did. Hey, there was a storm that rolled through, but here, you know, we're all huddled under the shelter and we're making s'mores under the shelter. We're playing games. Everybody's having a great time. And, you know, things like that can really help put a parent at ease and help them be connected to their child as they're away from home. Of course, there are other parents that, you know, they send their kids to camp and they're they're off to Vegas, or, you know, they're enjoying their own respite, right?
Yeah.
But they're also expecting that their child is having a respite from technology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we know, I mean, part of this was back to this effective camp research that which you were bringing up there, that being away, being unplugged, being set apart here is something that, well, and you described it like this. Camp is kind of unique in the chance to offer this right now.
It's the last place. It's the last place in existence where young people are away from their cell phones for more than a few hours at a time without it being a punishment.
That's poignant, right? Like, because that's what we're doing right now. We're using this as this bargaining chip or this punishment tool.
Oh,
it's often
do.
Our first one.
We do at home, and it, you know, we try not to as much as we can, you know. But you know, sometimes we say we're taking it away, you know, for this period of time, and it's a punishment, you know. But they'll still have access to other screens, you know. But at camp, we say no screens, leave the cell phone at home. And we're not going to, you know, be online. We're not going to watch movies. We're not going to do any of that. And the kids say it's a relief. I mean, this was the very first phase of the study when we were doing focus groups with kids. And we've repeated these several other times where we ask the young people, we don't even ask them specifically about technology. We'll ask them, so what's different about this experience at camp in comparison to home? And every single focus group that we've asked that question in has said technology, the absence of technology, being away from technology, not having my cell phone, not playing my video games, whatever it is, right? And then we'll have the follow-up question. Well, what do you think about that? How do you feel about that? And every single focus group, I like it better. Mm. It's a relief. You know, I might even have a sort of addiction to my technology. Direct quote. You know, so these are the kids, right? Again, this isn't the diagnostic and statistical manual, you know, saying it's a disorder. Sure. It's the kids
saying,
I might have an addiction to my technology. And being away from here ensures that I'm away from it. Like, and they fully admit when I get home, I'm probably going right back to my phone, you know, but here being away from it, it's a relief. And we say, why? And they'll answer with things like, people look me in the eyes. I don't feel like I'm being ignored. I can talk to people face to face. Those sorts of things they're so meaningful to young people. We take them for granted a lot as adults. You know, this ability to be with people, to interact with people. But face-to-face interaction can be very challenging for young people with poor social skills. And you know, camp offers that opportunity to improve those social skills and to have somebody look directly at them and not be looking away at their phone, you know, but give them their undivided attention. That is such a gift. And it's so infrequent for these young people.
Yeah.
And so being able to give that gift, they're really able to acknowledge that and see that and recognize the importance of being away from technology.
That's interesting that you even, like, of course, we talk about being on it, but even in the pocket, even having access, even having your hand on it while you're in this conversation, it's all there. It's all part of it.
There's this book called Networked. It's by Lee Rainey and Barry Wellman. And they talk about this in terms of, you know, when technology is present in the room, you'll have what they call absent presence. So you're physically there, but you're not giving your undivided attention. Your mind is elsewhere. Your attention is elsewhere, or it's divided. So absent presence. And kids experience this all the time when adults are focused on the screen, you know, doing something or their friends are focused on the screen. Their attention is divided. They're not paying direct attention to the young person. And young people desperately need attention and validation. Mm-hmm. And they're wondering, who am I? Am I worth it? Am I loved? And we say, yes, you're loved, as we're, you know, paying attention to something else.
Finish this, and I'll tell you that.
Yep. Yeah. Or I'll tell you that while I'm finishing this.
Yeah.
And what, you know,
and you'll wonder if I mean it.
So it's not just the words, right? It's the actions. It's a bodily knowing. And at camp, we are able to get that bodily understanding, that habitus that we talk about, of like, I feel it and I understand it in my being, in my body, not just in my mind. The assurance of love, the assurance of relationship. And it's a wonderful feeling. For these young people, especially those who are not accustomed to having that sort of attention.
Yeah. All right, Jake, we got to wrap up in a minute. Here's my last question for you. What does a camp director, a program director, do with this? How do we turn this knowledge into some of the decisions we make programmatically, how we deal with, to our point a second ago about when the others are on it, to staff usage of it, things like that.
Yes.
What does a camp and program director do with this knowledge right now?
Yeah, there's a few things. Okay, so first I would say there's a marketing angle to it, as there usually is when we have data. And so, you know, that 99% of the parents who send their kids to camp agree that it's a place to unplug from technology. When we ask them, should cell phones be allowed at camp, it's over 90% that say they disagree. They say no, do not allow cell phones at camp. And so lifting that up as a benefit, a place to be away from technology, a place where kids are happy away from technology, you know, things like that, connect that happiness and away from technology, and the outdoors, interaction, face-to-face interaction. I mean, those sorts of things can really help you market the camp experience. What are they getting? They're getting a respite from technology.
Yeah.
And they're going to be happy about it and they're going to enjoy it. And I think the second way to look at it is programmatically, like you said. And so there's several things you can do. One, you can do an audit of where are we using technology at camp? In what spaces are campers interacting with technology and in what level, you know? So some camps, I've been to some camps that show full-length movies during the camp experience. I strongly recommend that you stop doing this. Find a different program. There's so many other things you can do. Do a talent show, do something creative. You can still have a presentation sort of thing, but it can be live and interactive, and the campers can lead it. It's not passive reception, and it's not turning to a movie. They can watch a movie somewhere else. That's not what I send my kids to camp for.
Mm-hmm.
But there's other things too. Like, you know, where else are you using technology? Are you using screen technology? Are you projecting words on a screen? Can we change something like that? Where are the lights? Is there any place away from lights? Is there any place away from flush toilets even? I mean, there's different technology things that we can do, and we can look at, you know, different levels of this in terms of, is there internet connection somewhere that the kids are getting access to? If so, why? What's the point of that? You know, are there other technology pieces? You know, so some camps have maybe a photography program where the kids go out and take pictures, and then they use technology, you know, to
organize or edit or
organize,
whatever it
might
be,
do things like that, and that might be a positive use of technology, right? And
so, that
intentionality,
trying
to think
point
through things like that, I think, is really important. But what are we doing, and why are we doing it, and how does it fit in with the fundamental characteristics of camp, and how does it take away from the camp experience as well? I think those are important things to think about. You mentioned staff cell phone usage. This is a big challenge.
That's hard.
Because staff are going to have a break, and you can't say no cell phones during your break, right? But you can really encourage them to take a break from them, and talk about the challenges of technology and making sure that the campers don't see them with those cell phones. I think it can take away from the staff experience when they are going back and all they're doing is, you know, they're on their cell phone. So I think having a conversation with them about that and encouraging them not to use those, but also making sure that if they are, it's inside and it's away from the campers. Because when campers see something like that, that's just going to say, why can't I have it? Or can I borrow your cell phone? Some staff want to use their phone for pictures or for alarm clocks, things like that. don't let them do it. No cell phones in the cabins. Because if it's there, the kids will see it. Some of the kids will grab it and try to text their parents when the staff person isn't looking. And the staff person, when they think the campers aren't looking, it's a lot to ask for them not to go to their cell phone and check their social media. It's a lot to ask if it's there. Yeah. So these are hard things to figure out. But I really encourage camps to do an audit and have some conversations about how can we reduce our dependence on technology while in the camp space. Now, then we can pivot to what are some positive ways to use technology? We've talked about this, right? That was actually one of our New Year's resolutions on that episode.
Yeah.
Positive use of technology.
Mm-hmm.
And that has to do with connecting with the young people when they're not at camp. We talked about the concept of absent presence. There's also the opposite of that, present absence. So other people are in the room, but I'm not able to be there because I'm too distant or whatever. Technology allows us to connect again. And so doing a virtual campfire or something, you know, connecting with the camp community, the directors, the counselors, maybe that can be a great way for campers to stay connected virtually to the camp experience and remind them of the bodily connection that they have to camp. So there are positive ways to use technology, but not in the camp experience itself.
Amen. Folks, if you've got thoughts, there's always some good technology stories and or questions or, you know, other resources. Jake's mentioned a few books or things like that, but we know this has been in front of us for a while. So if you've got other resources, we want to hear about those. So offer those up. Send us a message on something like Instagram or Facebook, or shoot us an email. You can find all that info for our team at sacredplaygrounds.com and connect us with what else we should be knowing and hearing and can help spread for more of those kinds of things. And we will see you next time on the Sacred Playgrounds podcast. Thanks for listening to the Sacred Playgrounds podcast. This episode was produced by me, Jared Rendell, and featured Dr. Jake Sorensen, lead researcher and founder at Sacred Playgrounds, LLC. Our theme music was written and performed by Taylor Wilson. You can find his original songs wherever you get your music. Learn more and connect with the Sacred Playgrounds team at sacredplaygrounds.com.